This meeting is being recorded.
Hi, Dave Sanderson here, and I'm actually on the computer that is owned by Dave Sprague. Because we're out of town, so I'm here using his computer. Mark Sanderson, who is also listening, is my son. I guess a brief overview of what we're trying to do here. Our intention is to buy this property and this building and repurpose it as a restaurant instead of the real estate office that it is now. We've played with it a lot of different ways to make it economically feasible to actually purchase a property and put the money into turning it into a restaurant and still being able to turn a profit. And what we've done is, in doing so, we've tried to keep as much of the existing building as possible. And if you look at the floor plan that was put up and the windows, that the front windows along the facade looking at it from Main Street, what we did was kind of not our, be all end all of what architecturally we wanted the outside to look like, but more so a concept of what we wanted the footprint of the building to look like and how much usable space we were trying to gain. As far as the one large front window, we're perfectly acceptable to keep that one large window instead of two windows looking at it from, in fact, that's even preferable to us to keep that one large window. And what we've done is to try it, and then we're also going to keep about half of the building looking at it from Church Street. We're trying to keep about half of the building intact, running what would be, I guess, north to south down Church. And in doing so, we've tried to kind of keep that theme of that clipped corner. And we've moved it over. If you look at our drawing, we've moved that clip corner to where the entrance, and I don't know if my mouse is showing. Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
So we've moved that clip corner over there to try and keep that same theme going. And our issue is if we leave that clip corner down there where it is existing and that becomes the entrance, we essentially lose all that seating in that area, because that area then where that clip corner now is, if that is the walkway or that is the entrance to the building, essentially that's now become the path where everyone has to walk through to get to, like, the, let's say, bar area in the back and or bathrooms. So we'd lose all the tables in that path area. And then we're also putting people that are sitting next to that walkway in a table, we're subjecting them to somebody essentially walking past and possibly coughing or sneezing and within, a few feet of where they're trying to sit and eat. So we played with it a lot of different ways, and it seemed like the only way to get usable dining area out of that front square was to move the entrance over where we have it now. And the other benefit from doing that is if, during crowded times, dinner and lunch times, there's people waiting to be seated, they'll have a place to wait where they're not clogging up the sidewalk. If we leave that clipped corner as the front walkway, as it is now, people coming in to, waiting while they're waiting to be seated will be congregating out on the side, on the city sidewalk, and kind of making it difficult for other people to pass by and potentially maybe people walking out in the street to get around them. But it just, from a logistical standpoint, and able to get enough seats to make this, fiscally doable, we kind of are looking to, get as much real estate for seating as possible. In doing so, we need that our main indoor dining room is, not accessible direct from the sidewalk, but people would walk in and you'd still view from Main Street. Your view would still see the front door. If you look at the elevation, what it looks like from Main Street, you still have that clipped corner. There you go, where the door is. So you would see that from the sidewalk. You would see that from the street. You'd see it from the corner, that whole area. Go down with your pointer to where the door is. Yeah. And then that area to the right of that, which is our outdoor patio seating, is still wide open. That's where the parking lot is now, but you still have an open space that you can see driving in, entering town. You can still see the front door driving in from Main Street, coming down Church Street. You'll still see right across that. So it still maintains that open space. And we've tried to, as best we can, keep, and again, those two windows at the bottom, we'd prefer to leave that as one big window. And again, kind of the stonework or brickwork on the facade of the building was just, that really was just kind of a conceptual idea of giving an idea of what we kind of, want the outside to look like. But we're really open as far as architecturally, aesthetically, what the outside of the building looks like. We are more concerned with getting enough usable space to make this project feasible.
Well, thank you. And I think I commend you as coming to us early because this is the time for us to offer suggestions going forward because you've made clear what your goals are, is trying to maintain the historic look of it with the at, from the corner of the of Main and Church. And then so I think, and that you are trying to make it usable space for your restaurant. And I guess I would go back to Dale because you said there was you were looking at the windows in particular, or there was other things you thought you would suggest.
Yeah, and just and hearing what you just said, one historic importance is having the entrance close to the street and having a very obvious entrance. You described that clipped entrance in the back. It's really an infill. The clip would be really the existing clip. Is that just for terminology? And I think the exterior entrance that you propose is great, but and it does accommodate both inside and outside waiting places. Now, I would just be concerned about the existing building and keeping the angle, which is the historic facade, and maybe that whole door system again, because we don't have existing elevations. If we could go back to
The
the Google
Google.
shot, it would give us a better sense of really what's there.
Okay.
But I think it's important in downtown buildings to have entrances near the front facade. And I think an exception could be made as you proposed. And that maybe that bank of windows gets turned into a similar small pane window arrangement. So those facade openings still stay similar, but it also, that clipped edge will also make your entrance, which is quite recessed, more visible coming around the corner,
But
rather than having to peek around the corner. And I think that if you kept the clip, just on looking at the floor plan again, I think you would lose a two top at most. So you really wouldn't lose any more other than two spaces in terms of your seating capacity.
now, where is the clip in that is existing today?
It's
I
shown in
don't
a
see it.
dotted line, very light dotted line, if you look at that indoor
But
space.
if you look at the photograph, I don't see a clip on the building.
Yeah, it's hard to tell perspective-wise, but if you look at the floor plan,
There
you
you
see
go.
that clip.
Yeah, oh, it's
So it
slight.
appears, yeah, it appears about 5 by 10 or something like that, or
But
seven by ten.
and
But
you're
it's in.
proposing that they maintain that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think it's awkward to look at three doors and not think that that's the entrance. So I think from a historic standpoint, retaining the integrity of the historic building, because it always has been a clip, to use that clip and create another window with the small panes that's on the street side, which you've proposed basically everywhere, and that two-top would go away.
The two-top, what's that now?
The two-top means a two-person seating.
Oh, so, that. Oh, right. Okay, yeah, the two seats are lost is all.
Right. Or you make another four-top where the six-top is, and that put that two-top right in front of the window.
Yeah, and the seating arrangements, you know, are right now just kind of conceptual, you know, so that could be worked around. And I understand what you're saying. Leave that angle alone, but still maintain our front entrance where we have it now. Is that correct?
Yeah,
In order to not confuse people as to where the actual door is, turn that existing clipped corner that has the doors and turn it into a windows that match the front windows on the facade from Main Street. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah. Good.
Then we have the integrity of the historic building, opening up your entrance even more, kind of giving people a little bit.
Sure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and maybe we could even offset that space that we're losing there with, if you look in front of the outdoor patio, we have a large planter area. Yeah, right there.
Right.
And maybe we could, you know, and we just threw that planter in there for aesthetics. Maybe we can cut that planter down and gain what we lose on that clip corner, gain another table in that corner where we have the planter.
Yeah, or even where it's clipped, that could also be a planter, a low planter.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Exactly.
So we could just, both
right,
sides.
We could move the planter, shift it over there, and then we'd almost have a net zero loss to our table. And actually, aesthetically, that would look nice as well, too. And it would be nice to have someone could sit in front of that window. And, that, you know, actually, I don't have any issue with that whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I see filling the clip with landscape. So you can still look over it and get a quicker look at the entrance that's recessed. But the landscape, I think, is a nice idea. Or were you thinking about shortening it so a table would fit there?
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking moving some of that planter, you know, it's a pretty large planter, but moving some of it over in front of like the clipped area that's existing right now.
Right. Yeah.
That way you don't have people walking up and being able to stand right next to the window and, you know, put their face on the window where someone's on the other side trying to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a little buffer with the planter.
Right. And so the ornamentation won't be changed, I would assume, on your project, the exterior.
Well, just that corner there where the marker is, instead of it being a square corner or a 90 degree corner, it would now turn into a clipped corner.
Right.
You know, or that corner right there. And just actually it would just remain clipped because that's what the building is right now. And we're trying to save as much of the building as we can.
Okay.
And then our proposed entrance would still be as is.
Well, let me ask Bill. Emery, you were saying the ornamentation is higher up, isn't it, in the building?
Well, it's hard to tell with the awning there. So I don't know what's under the awning.
So that's if I understand the applicant's suggesting, it would retain all the exterior features with the exception of making that clip on your drawings.
Well, I'm going to chime in there. They've definitely proposed a different cornice than there is now. There's a very small top to those.
Oh, is there?
Walls. Okay. Yeah, look at the Google again, and you can see that.
Oh, you can? Oh, yeah. Okay.
My old photographs should show the detail.
Oh, that. I see what you're saying. Above, it's actually above.
Yeah, go from the 45 degrees so you see both. Yeah,
okay.
You can see they're uneven. There's a step there. But the ornamentation is really just looks like even flashing.
Yeah, it's just metal flashing.
Yeah.
I think it's not an architectural detail. It's just
kind of metal. On Main Street, it looks like gutter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's gutter. Yeah.
And that's just
gutter and lights.
Yeah. So really, there isn't much there.
Now that I get looking at it, there's a lot of shadows give the illusion.
Maybe so. So
yeah, those what looks like detail are shadows from lights that are up there.
Interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, but my old photographs will help quite a bit. So I'll try to find those.
Okay. And what about the addition itself?
Well, I have a question back to that roof that we were just looking at. It's currently stepped, that parapet. So will that step be maintained or will it be flattened like it shows in the elevation?
Let's go back to the elevation.
Because it might affect the windows that belong to the brothers' building as far as the elevation of that exterior deck.
Those windows, okay, so where the proposed residential apartment is, they do not block any of the windows. The windows are forward more towards Main Street. So the upper addition of the apartment will absolutely not block any windows from Brothers. And nothing, you know, right now, those they're just very small windows that look out over. Right now, they're looking out over the top of the roof, you know, so they're seeing asphalt roofing and air conditioning ducting and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's certainly no view, and what they are looking at is probably less attractive than what we're going to propose.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that. But if you look at the Google, again, just, you know, the elevation, the actual the grade of the proposed deck, where is it in relationship to those windows that are on the brothers?
So our proposed deck is going to be basically the same height as what the existing roof is now.
Mm-hmm. And is that roof, it looks like the parapet steps several times. So is the roof, the existing roof sloped?
Yeah, you know, that's an answer I don't have an answer for that. I haven't been up on the roof.
It's,
but I would assume it must slope, otherwise, you know, it must slope.
Okay, to the gutters.
So, yeah, it slopes, and actually I've just been told, it slopes forward towards Main Street to those gutters.
Okay.
Yeah, so the rear
the parapet might be shaved down, sure.
Yeah, the rear of the building is quite ugly, actually.
Well, and there's some structural issues in the rear of the building. You know, whether we do this, or, you know, whatever. But if you point right there, see where that window and door is right there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the existing elevation where those trash cans are and where the parking lot is about, I don't know, 4 to 6 feet higher than the floor elevation of the existing mm-hmm. building. Mm-hmm. And right now there's a door down there, and there's a probably, I don't know, 8 by 10 or 8 by 12 foot area that slopes down with nothing but dirt, and it slopes down to that back door, and there's no drain, there's no way for any of the water to get away. And it, right now there's some metal flashing at the bottom of the door with some silicone seal to kind of prevent heavy water from going inside the building. So, and like you say, the back of the building is not, you know, it's trash cans, and, you know, with the way that the elevations are and what the water does when it rains, there's some serious issues back there anyway. And our new proposed building will, you know, obviously address all that and get rid of it.
It's great.
You know, it'll hide it too. So yeah. I think it's an improvement.
Yeah, for sure. So as far as the design's compatibility, I thought it was a good representation. So the patio is accessible. The upstairs patio is accessible from within the restaurant, I guess.
Correct. From the downstairs. There's a stairway going up to the upstairs patio.
Okay.
Exactly. So it's only accessible from inside the restaurant.
Okay.
That way we don't, when we're closed, we don't have homeless going up there and camping out.
Right.
Yeah, I would just mention something that Derek mentioned regarding a base. And I think, Derek, you mentioned that you talked about putting a base more at the sill of the windows, which is more typical.
Yeah, and again, we're open to whatever architectural, look that, will kind of make everybody happy and what will conform with the rest of the other buildings in the area. We're not dead set on any type of, as far as aesthetic finish to the building. It can be stucco, it can be brick, it could be, stone. That's not, our main concern is just making sure, the actual layout and the footprint of the building can accommodate enough seating to make this economically feasible.
Right. And Derek, you had another comment regarding the structure.
The what?
The structure of the open air roof.
Yes, that's right.
A little cupola.
Cupola, yeah. So again, we don't know it, though. Again, you're saying that the materials are still open, and
we're open to suggestion on that. We drew something in just so that conceptually you have an idea of what we're trying to accomplish there. We need some type of roof cover over that, and we want it to be as open as possible to kind of create the same kind of situation as what's there, kind of open space. But we do need something to cover it so that that patio is usable more than 3 months out of the year, when it rains and when it's wet.
So
it could be a flat roof, it could be something that matches the architecture, looking at it from Maine and Church, that matches the existing architecture. We're kind of open to whatever you guys would like as far as that goes, just so long as... And we're going to deal with a couple of the local, or at least we have two of the local architecture firms who have designed some other buildings in the city that, we're hoping to get some suggestions from them and, Kistler and White. But we want to get through this process first before we start spending an exorbitant amount of money getting, architectural drawings and everything, designed. Before, we make sure that everybody's on board with our concept.
Because you need that information before you purchase the property, is that
right? There you go. Exactly. And that's where we're at right now. We're, we're kind of at our due diligence period. And, we've already obviously, we've got these plans drawn and, we've spent a, fair chunk of money already. But the main thing is we want to make sure that we, have a green light to move forward before we purchase the property.
I think, like Terry said, concept anyway is a significant improvement on that property, I would say, overall. Mm-hmm. So do you all have, you who are architects and realtors and so forth, do you have any suggestions about things like the structure over the first floor patio? Go ahead, Sam.
I would like to see a continuation on the roof line and things of this, gazebo looking roof from the structure that's on the left of it. So it's just a harmonious look across and not looking like a separate detached building. And it's not a building, it's a cover, but I think it could continue.
So more of a geometric line?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was going to say the same thing, Sam, and I think that if they wanted to explore that, then that might even open up, twice as much open space that could be seated if that were a load-bearing rooftop.
Oh, that's interesting. And I mean, we would definitely be into that, but we were, that honestly, that was our original idea. but we were trying to kind of, you know, limit how much rooftop seating, you know, that you guys would be acceptable to you. But we would definitely be open to that. Continue that same facade look in that same whatever detail you have in the existing building, and get rid of that canopy type thing. And certainly it could be done. Could be designed structurally where it would give us more rooftop
seating. Great lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be, we're open to, absolutely 100%.
Would be easier, that. I would think.
Yeah.
Well, I would just chime in with that. I would disagree with that. I think anything monolithic and horizontal is certainly a historic precedent in its own right. Like a solid, it seemed like it would have to be a solid stucco flat something. I mean, I suppose it could have arches or something, you know, that would, you know, mitigate the flatness and the horizontalness. But I rather like the contrast of the lightness of the roof and open air feeling to it. And to have a huge deck just seems out of proportion.
Yeah, the massing of it would really stand out. The mass of it would be...
Right. It would be so much more simple. And I just think the contrast of having the masonry buildings surrounded by in the little courtyard of, you know, a galvanized roof or something that, you know, can have some historic qualities to it.
That was our thought, why we kind of veered away from one large, huge upper deck, you know, because we thought this kind of gave it more detail and just kind of, you know, made that open air patio kind of just simplistic. You know, right now it's a parking lot and we were trying not to, you know, completely change the entire look of it.
Right.
I agree with that thought about trying to keep the massing down and keep the upper deck reduced in size. Because I think as you're driving into town, being able to see that corner is the patio with an interesting roof line above it kind of breaks up the massing and actually adds a bit of interest, you know, to the whole streetscape. As you look down Main Street, you know, it's right across from the Native sculpture and, you know, two-story buildings surrounding it. It kind of steps into town, which I think could be kind of pleasing.
I agree with you, but if you were to look at the clipping, as we're calling it, that first post, the one at the corner of Church and Main, is going to have to move back anyway. So with the clipping, you know, I think that you could celebrate that corner anyway, and if you could detail it, so the mass wouldn't be as much as what you see now, because that post is going to have to move back about 5 feet.
Well, isn't it already 5 feet back?
Oh, it's more than that. I think let me understand what you're saying. You're saying if we did continue the facade of the building along the existing line, that post where we have it now, we have it set back, I think, 6 feet or something, maybe eight feet.
Yeah, it has to come back.
It would have to come out parallel with the existing building.
Yeah, with the corner that's right there, where the two top is, right there. It would have to come back there. So you would lose all of that anyway. So the mass of that deck wouldn't be as much as it's shown.
Maybe I'm confused.
The deck above the outdoor seating could be anywhere along that clip. It wouldn't have to be.
Oh, so she's saying, go straight from there. I think with that post where it is right now, you see you will be able to see that if we leave the clip in the existing wall, it'll still be exposed and it won't be blocked by that post.
If you go back, so if I could draw, which I'm going to. So like if the deck came here instead, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
So that's what I'm just saying. So the flattened area doesn't come proud of that clipping, it stays back.
Got it. I understand what you're saying now. From what I'm hearing, it sounds like majority of you are kind of you know, in agreement that maybe it's better not to have more decking area up there and to kind of leave the simplistic look of just the, you know, the patio cover there, you know, breaking it up so it kind of gives a little more detail than, you know, making it look like a one big monolithic uniform square building.
Yeah,
I agree. Good. Well put.
I like Piper's idea, because I think that really reveals more of the original building, more of that clip. And this building, when you come into town, it's the first thing you see when you come into downtown, and it would be a shame to lose a lot of the features that we have there. I think the project is a good idea, and I think by eliminating the parking lot and increasing the size of the building, it actually completes this aspect of downtown in some ways as you approach it from the north coming into town with the parking lot there. This aspect of downtown looks a little incomplete, and by filling in the blank,
I
think it will enhance the downtown plaza area.
So going back to, Mark, is that?
Mark's my son. I'm Dave.
You're Dave. Okay. Yeah. Dave, you said that you're hearing the consensus that you won't have the upstairs patio.
We'll have. Oh, I'm sorry. What I'm hearing is that we'll still have the upstairs patio seating, but it will not be extended to where that gazebo. You know, that gazebo looking area will stay kind of a simplistic, you know, open air patio with just something light, corrugated metal, you know, something.
Right.
You know, that doesn't look like it's structural, you know, something that kind of maintains the size of the building. You know, so it doesn't look so massive. You know, if we kind of make that corner look like it's part of the building, I think it gives you, and from one of you, and I forget which one also spoke, I think it was Dale, said that, you know, by continuing that same look over there, that it kind of gives you the impression that it's just one big giant building with maybe some windows missing at the bottom of, you know, rather than that being an open air patio.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I like the open air patio. I think that adds to the look of the project.
It really does. I think its concept is good. So, are there any other questions or suggestions you want to offer?
I have one more comment about just that elevation, and I know this is very early on, but you proposed, it looks like, steel railings or something along the sidewalk. If all the planters were raised and stepped, that could go away.
Oh yes, we just wanted it to where, you know, someone walking off the street couldn't just step across the planter and walk into the back patio, you know, or vice versa. You know, it makes it a little more difficult for someone sitting right at a table there to get their food and eat, and then as soon as a waiter or waitress leaves, to turn around and run around the corner without paying their bill.
You
know what I mean? It's just like they're literally, you know, they got to walk through the restaurant, or at least, you know, through other tables. And honestly, it gives, you know, kind of a definition between, you know, what is the patio and what is, you know, the sidewalk. You know, so, and it doesn't have to be wrought iron. It could be, you know, plants. It could be just something, so there's a little separation between the people walking on the sidewalk and people sitting and eating.
Yeah, well, it appears that it's a couple of feet at least of planter area. And if they were built up, that you couldn't walk. I mean, it'd be a bigger job to jump over them.
Yeah, and I'd be good with that too. Again, that wrought iron is just kind of conceptual. It's not, we're not, you know, married to that.
Yeah, I just can't think of any historic building that has any has it.
So there will be a code issue there at Church Street, though. Unless you can get 3 feet of planting, then they'll need a guardrail.
Oh,
at least towards the addition piece.
Along Church, but not necessarily along Main. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, and you know why? You're right. And that was the other reason, now that I think about it, because of the elevation difference. Mm-hmm. The sidewalk right there at church at that back corner where you're pointing is probably at that point maybe 2 to 3 feet higher than the finished floor inside mm-hmm. the patio area. So you need something to keep people from, you know, falling off of that.
I like the idea of the open railing in that it allows more visibility
right.
Back towards the original structure.
And that's what we were going for. We wanted something as open. And I mean, it could even be, you know, some kind of glass panels, you know, that are completely see-through. But we do need something, you know, code-wise to keep people safe that are walking on the sidewalk from falling in.
Right, well, makes sense. And that area to the right, was it Brandon that mentioned that to add windows or something?
Yeah, and that's a given. We just didn't draw them in, but we definitely want windows in there, because behind that, if you look at the floor plan, behind that area right there, that is actual seating. So we'd like windows to bring light into that area.
Sure.
So it's not so dark back there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a plus.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a given. That was, you know, we just, again, you know, I had an architect just kind of, you know, draw a conceptual plan so that we had something to present to you, to show you. And, you know, it wasn't just crap, you know, hastily thrown together. This was, I mean, we went through a half a dozen different designs and changes to get to this point, but we just didn't spend a lot of time on architectural detail as far as aesthetics on the outside of the building.
Right. Yeah. So on the front, then that thing,
we lost your voice.
Yeah. We temporarily. But the fence, too, I mean, there's not a lot of restrictions for historic purposes, are there, Dale?
Well, Piper made a good point in terms of the 3 feet drop. I think it's 30 inches is the code. I don't know if that's
right. It's 30.
Is that right, Piper?
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you, and it's like a ramp, in a handicap ramp, if you put a 4 to 6 inch curb, and the minimum would be to have a mid rail and a rail at 42 inches to stop you from falling off at the 3 foot point. But 90% of it's less than 3 feet.
Correct.
So it might be just something in the upper section that might have to accommodate that. But yeah. The step planters might be 6 inches at the sidewalk point and then 18 before it steps down again or something. You know?
Yeah. So that honestly, for us, that's preferable. We want it as open and airy and open looking as possible.
I think that's a good look. And Derek, do you think there have any comment about the any zoning things that like Piper brought up?
You know, I don't really have anything additional. I mean, I'm appreciative of your comments tonight and,
yeah, I think
a really good discussion.
Yeah, it's a pleasant discussion when you haven't invested thousands and thousands of dollars in a design by now. So that's why.
But, you know, I mean, we truly, honestly, you know, and I'm sure, you know, you can take this for what it's worth, but we really love the town. And, you know, we're not trying to, you know, make something that doesn't fit. We want it to fit. We want, you know, it to enhance and do something better on that corner. We have property up by Howard Prairie Lake and we're building a home up there and we plan to be, you know, residents of this area and we like it. And, you know, that was one of the things that attracted us to here was the quaintness of the city and, you know, kind of the existing architecture. So we have every intention and every desire to kind of make something that improves this corner.
That's great.
Well, I know this, I think our commission appreciates that a lot because, and why I think this is a fun process when we're both working towards the same end in terms of, it's definitely, in my opinion, an improvement on looking at mostly a parking lot in that corner. And so, I mean, it will
I commend you for being willing to start a restaurant in Ashland.
Yeah, maybe I need some counseling. I don't know.
Oh, I think people like restaurants here. Yeah. But I think...
People don't like losing money, though.
Yeah. So at this point, do we... Brandon, remind me, do we just... We have shared our suggestions. Should we put those in some formal way?
As this is essentially a pre-application review, the plan is conceptual.
Right.
Mr. Sanderson has gotten some good feedback from you in terms of refinements of the details.
Right.
You know, I wasn't hearing from any commission members any concerns over the two-story volume in the back. And
right.
Inversely, appreciation for maintenance of the one-story volume in the front and the retention of that clip. So with that direction, Mr. Sanderson, if he moves forward, would be putting together a formal application, at which point that would be submitted to the city for consideration and come back to this commission for a recommendation to the planning commission. But to address your question, you don't need to make any kind of formal recommendation.
I thought that's right. And so I would just ask Mr. Sanderson if you feel you have had the feedback that you were hoping for.
Mainly, what I was really looking for is just your honest assessment, because based on what we got out of this meeting will determine whether or not we go ahead, move forward sure. with the purchase of the property. And what I didn't want was kind of a split commission, you know, half of you saying we're against this and the other half saying we like it. Because then my concern was we move forward with the purchase of the property, we submit and we do the formal application, and the ones that don't like it are convinced the ones that do like it to, you know, deny the project. And now we've bought a piece of property that, you know, we can't do what we intended to do. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like generally you're all on board with this. You know, of course, you know, we'll make, you know, aesthetic and architectural things to the
sure.
outside of the building to comply with, you know, but as far as the overall floor plan and the general design, you're okay with it. And that was our biggest concern, you know, that if any part of it, you know, I don't know, the outdoor patio seating, the rooftop seat, if something was denied, it kind of got us to the point where we wouldn't have enough tables to make this economically feasible. But it sounds like the general plan in itself is mostly okay with
and it. Especially since you indicated that you didn't have a problem with making the clipped corner where it is, and it's not hopefully not going to cause you too many seats.
No, but we can live with that. It just, as long as that doesn't need to be the entrance. You know, if that was the entrance for the building, that makes it that indoor seating area, you
know, right,
makes it a tough go.
Well,
going in the right direction, I think.
So, oh, there you are, Terry. Yes, yeah. And if Terry says you're moving in the right direction, you're in good shape, because because he doesn't always say that. Yeah,
the voice from above has spoken.
No, he's such a—he's our main historian, and has lived in this town, was born and raised in this town. And so, no, I think I think everybody is appreciative of the concept and as being a worthy contribution to the downtown. So, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you all for your time. And you know, thank you for at least all of you being kind of on the same page.
Yeah.
greatly appreciated.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, we usually work well together.
All right. Well, thank you all again for your time.
Yes, thanks, you too. And good luck.
You'll be getting a formal.
Oh, good.
Submittal from us.
We'll look forward to that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so we were supposed to be at 7, but that was the kind of meeting discussion I really appreciate, because they haven't made huge investments and they don't have to rethink the whole project. I think all the suggestions that you made were really useful. And So I think it could be a real contribution myself. But now we just go to the discussion items. The historic preservation recap. Anybody want to talk about it? I thought it went fine.
I think you did a great job, Beverly. And I think it was one of the best ones we've had because you encouraged discussion and speeches, and we got to hear from everybody and really get a lot more detail than and the relationships between, you know, the different yes. folks. So that was fun to see.
That was fun to hear how they all collaborated and hear the story. And, you know, like the Keith was talking, brought to our attention the Woman and Her Daughters project. That was a labor of love if I ever saw it. So I was pleased with the discussion. Yeah. Anybody else have any response? Was that?
Well, it's all in the stories, you know.
That's what
because,
I think.
Because each structure, whether it's a new addition or a remodel or whatever, it's like to be able to hear in our experience of community
yeah.
how people approach, you know, the challenges of doing that work, because it is a challenge.
And I thought it was very engaging because each story is unique. So yes. there, you know, and it was great that so many of the people who were on projects were all there to speak to their portion of it. So,
you know, for years, the mayor used to read the proclamations that we'd written. And, you know, the mayor was not in on the ground floor of this. We were, and I think it's much better mm-hmm. to have the commissioners read what they have written and
right.
be there for the presentation.
Yeah, because you've had those conversations. That's what I think is each of you wrote after talking to a lot of these people, but I'm glad that everybody else enjoyed it because I really loved hearing the stories.
Yeah.
And and I felt like people enjoyed telling their stories even.
Oh yeah.
So
a point of pride.
Yes, that's, absolutely. So we move now to the update on the Marking Ashland Places. And I want to just comment at the beginning that the new chair of PAC, Public Arts Commission, has already approached me about starting to move into another phase of looking at perhaps another historic district to do the same kind of approach where we look for historic sites and use medallions again and have an artistic hub of some sort, whether it's sculpture or something else. And as it happens, he came to the award ceremony. And so Dale and I were able to talk to him after that. And we came, what Dale made us aware of is that after these initial medallions are completed in the railroad district, there may be other medallions in the railroad district that we want to do. And then the question becomes, do we move into a district and start a whole new district? Do we finish off the railroad commission? Those kinds of things. That's still being considered. My proposal was a two-track approach where Dale could work on medallions with maybe the help of Peter Finkel, who's done the Walking Ashland project and has had some input. But as a starting point, I asked Dale if for tonight he would talk about what the status of those medallions is right now in the railroad district and his ideas about going forward. And I think Brandon is going to put up some drawings for for these medallions, right?
I don't have drawings of the medallions. When we spoke, you indicated that Dale might be discussing the issue around the 12-inch radius quarter
right.
concrete edge.
So Dale can explain why these got very complicated very fast in the installation.
Yeah, I think that this is just a little sidelight, just so you know what's going on. But, you know, I think the bigger discussion we should probably return to would be what direction does the Historic Commission prefer to go
right.
You're finishing the ones, additional ones in the railroad district before moving to another district. So this is an architectural drawing on the right-hand side of a trowel that would go around the 24-inch medallions. And so it has a 12-inch radius and a quarter inch radius on the outside of the medallions right there. And so this was a starting point to start looking at. This is a drawing that's that my son actually did on a CAD program. And when I sent these to Derek, little did I know that he is a 3D printer.
You mean Brandon?
Brandon. That he does 3D printing, and before I knew it, there it is. He made it.
My defense, I actually didn't make this from Dale's drawings or this this CAD drawing, as I'd not yet seen this, but we just discussed it and understood the concept of that quarter inch inside,
right,
over on a 12 inch diameter. So I went ahead and provided it to show Dale, but. Again, it's a proof of concept, I guess.
Yes, it is.
If there is a final iteration of this, we can print it in a hard enough plastic that I think could work for a concrete edger for the medallion coming forward.
Right. So what I did from my drawing is I talked to three or four 3D printers, and we talked about different materials and talked to people who have made it before, and I hadn't talked to Brandon by that time. And so then we felt like, you know, would plastic hold up, and do we want to make one really out of metal? So then I pursued a machinist, Stephen Eugene, who would also do a CAD drawing similar to what you saw there, the flat one without a handle. And they would look very similar to what Brandon put together, but it would be CC and routered out of a solid piece of aluminum. And it would be something that might last for 10 or 20 or 50 medallions if we chose to go that direction. Then the complicated, so I've been doing this all kind of on my own. And I was so happy to see Brandon come up with an actual piece, because now it's something that I can talk to contractors about. But it's a complicated process in that the city requires three bids, and if people really want to talk about this before they put a bid in, and it's very hard to get a contractor to kind of speculate about how to do something on a city project that's pretty tightly spec'd. And so we're still in that process. That turns out that the concrete in the railroad park off the end of 7th Street has to be completely rebuilt at the street level, because it's a driveway and it's also a handicap entrance, and those codes have all changed. And if you look at Siskiyou Boulevard, they're doing those similar kinds of things along Siskiyou Boulevard, and so they've had to get a new survey to be able to do that and design that, because it's a little bit outside the scope of the city's capabilities. So it's been a little delayed there, but so it's a work in progress, and it'll eventually get done, but you know, there's some obstacles in the way.
Yeah. And didn't you tell me that there's a survey you're waiting on too from the city?
Yeah, the survey for the 7th Street entrance to the Golden Connections sculpture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's still probably not clear what the timeline will be.
No, next few months.
But who knew that you'd have to invent a new tool just
right.
to...
Well, and then we had COVID issues with Masterworks in New York.
So that's right.
That slowed them down. And actually, Ken England from the Public Arts Commission contacted Jennifer.
Right.
And she right now could not commit to doing some more, I think, because she's had some issues with her foundry and probably employee design issues. And so she wouldn't even be able to look at it again for 6 months. So there's a little another complication there, but we just so enjoyed working with Masterworks.
Yeah.
The quality of the product it was just beyond. So
it was amazing.
Yeah.
So do you have any questions about that Dale is spending a remarkable amount of time, which I think we all appreciate, in getting this done right. And like you say, a lot of these contractors with concrete, they haven't done this kind of stuff before either. So it's all new. But I know that Ken England, the Public Arts Commission chair, is their commission meets at the end of the month. And he is wanting to know from us whether there's an interest in continuing to another phase. One of the things we talked about when Dale and he and I met for lunch is trying to take advantage of the fact that there's been such a great public reception and appreciation for this first effort. And the hub sculpture and the medallions, and just calling attention, especially to the Chinese immigrant story in the telling of the Railroad Historic District. Those kinds of things have gotten a lot of attention. So I think Ken thinks, and I agree, that if we are supportive of moving forward on continuing, maybe work on another district. And I will say that he's eager to start on the downtown district. For one thing, when this was first brought up in 2013, when it had its origins, the city council had initially preferred that this project focus on downtown, and then it got changed to the Railroad District, which is just obviously as rich a history. But Ken England was pointing out what we were talking about earlier, that he's interested in calling attention to Indigenous people in their impact and history in the downtown area. But what we're trying to do is find a way that we don't have to work through a formal subcommittee and have people using their time in committee meetings. So I think what we'll try to do is, if there is in fact a consensus by the Historic Commission that you'd like to proceed, then Ken and I have talked about trying to just get together with probably Dale and maybe Peter Finkel and make a proposal for what the next step phase would look like. And then have specific tasks where we could get working groups on, like working on medallions in particular, what historic sites. But I guess the two questions I'm looking for feedback on is, one, do you want to go forward even while the medallions are being worked on in the Railroad District? Do you want to go forward and look at another district? Do you want to complete the Railroad District and all its historic sites first? Or are you ready, I think, to take a two-track approach, which is we do both, finish off the medallions as we get there, but mostly, is there a willingness to proceed into the next phase? Maybe you have questions about that.
I would just add to that, just for another little perspective, that, you know, the incentive, I would think, from the Public Arts Commission would be, because they have jurisdiction over the hub sculpture, and that's part of, can be part of their budget. If they weren't doing that, and we just continued with the medallion project down on A Street, completed it with maybe 2, 3, 4 more medallions and finished that area before we moved to the other one, they don't have much incentive to kind of spend their money or help out.
I think that's right.
And then it made me think that, you know, if we finished that area with 3 or 4 or 5 more medallions, but maybe worked on a hub sculpture that, as you say, you know, might be Native American themed.
Yeah.
Does it need to have medallions right away, or,
you know, right.
And could we really afford to do both at the same time?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the tricky part about this partnership we have with is that we don't have our own source of funding. And so it's really coming through the Public Arts Commission. And I think that their incentive is, I think Dale's exactly right. I think if they had something to work on at that point, but I haven't talked to any of you individually about your interest in continuing it. So that's kind of what I'd like to hear from you about. And you don't have to sign up for a subcommittee. That's a good thing.
Well, I'll speak up first, since I won't be able to sign up for a committee. But it does seem to me, to be able to engage the public arts, to be able to move forward in a two-phased sort of thing, because it's nice to initiate a new endeavor, especially because I think that would also grasp the attention of the public.
Yeah.
You know? And to also, you know, add on to it at that point, you know, additions to the railroad district as well, because then it just further spreads the web of interest throughout town. So doing them both sounds good. And again, because the funding comes through public arts, which oddly enough, I think when we started this whole thing with the city council, I'm trying to remember back, they kind of were throwing us a bone to say, well, maybe we could do something, you know. And, you know, at that point, they were kind of saying it in such a way that we would actually also have funding too.
Yeah.
That never developed.
Well, actually, they did apply for grants at the early stage, and that didn't pan out.
Yeah. Well, maybe more could be
achieved,
but I think that, you know, just being able to keep the momentum going with the help of public arts, because the partnership has been so positive. I think that the Golden Spike sculpture has been a great success.
Yeah.
And they've done a masterful job on that. So I would support that. This is my swan song to you know, to continue on with that agenda.
That's the way I see it, is that you never know. I'm very interested in pursuing it. And he, as chair of the PAC, is really interested. So, you know, I always forget that we now have to have an election for officers, and I might not be the chair. But the point is, I think I want to, is there anybody else who wants to say how you feel about the two-track approach?
I like the idea of the two-track approach as well. I think it's important to develop the hub, because without the hub, we can't generate a lot of interest in what's happening in the periphery.
Right.
So I think in whatever way we can continue with public arts in the way that they want to proceed, because they have money.
Yes.
Would make sense, and to have whatever input we can have.
Well, I appreciate it. You, let's see, Sam, or is Piper still here? I don't know. Piper's still here.
Sam's still here. And I agree. I would like to see them get into the downtown.
Okay.
That's what initially the city council wanted. And I don't think we should stop the railroad district, but I think that it might be a good plan to start doing things for the downtown district.
Okay. And so is it, can, without, do you think, I'm going to ask Brandon again, do you think it would help to have a motion that we've discussed this and, or can I just say there was, can I report a consensus of people who were here? I assume, Dale, you're okay with the two track approach?
Yeah, I think so. Again, the funding is going to be an issue.
And yeah.
I'll also say that because the medallions were done first and the hub sculpture was done second, you know, it's the interpretation of the artist who's chosen to do that. And we had three proposals and everybody took a different track. The one in particular who won with the golden spike, obviously the golden spike was an important part of it, but it was so great that she focused really on the Chinese portion of it.
Right.
And that, you know, it's something that you almost have to do the medallions to give a kind of a feel for the whole downtown. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously there's Native Americans, but there's also the pioneers and all the conflicts. And,
right.
You know, and so
there may be more than one hub, as right. a matter of fact.
So you could have a committee that worked on, you know, if there were 10 places downtown and the medallions were maybe designed but not built.
Right.
Or the concepts, anyway.
The concepts, yeah.
Because the design really comes from the foundry and the
right.
masterwork. So, but then, I don't know, it's a little more complicated, I think, in that, you know, you could maybe fund the rest of the railroad district but have the committee kind of come up with the concepts for the places and maybe get a hub sculpture out of it and
yeah.
kind of have it in reverse order this time. But you never know what the focus of the artist is until you get proposals.
Well,
can you hear me?
Oh, yes, Terry. Yeah. Now we can hear you.
I lost my audio.
Oh.
I just wanted to say that I have photographs of the downtown and you know, other places. So just
definitely. So make it, take advantage.
Right.
So you can send, what you were saying earlier, Terry, is you can send stuff directly to Regan. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
That I think is an important resource going forward. So I appreciate that. Do you feel like it's good to work on both at the same time and downtown as well as these medallions in the railroad district?
Right. If you want to get them done, you know, the more the better.
Yeah, that's good. And Piper, did you have something to say?
Yeah, no, I remember when the medallion projects the actual like subcommittee started, and I was there yeah. with Dale for the first few meetings and with you too, Beverly. And I love the idea that we're doing the railroad district rather than the downtown, because the downtown is so rich with public art. And I think that was part of the purpose of doing the railroad district for the arts commission,
was it?
Because
okay.
they wanted to do something other than where all the art is currently. And so I think that the focus also was to, you know, garner attention to some of these other areas in town other than the downtown.
Yeah.
So I don't want to lose sight of that, because there are other historic districts, and there are you know, other contributions that, you know, Native people have made and you know, the pioneers and all these different cultures have made throughout the town, not just yes. downtown. So I think that, you know, if we can continue forward, I would be curious if, you know, I'm not to say just totally skip the downtown, but, you know, what's the next place that we would go? Like, yeah. is there, you know, what's the next district?
The Skidmore district.
Skidmore?
A lot of history.
Does it?
Yes.
And
And would you, what part of the history would you think is significant, real quickly, on that?
Well, the Academy building is an important one in the corner of Man, that's at the corner of High and Manzanita.
Uh-huh.
And the old school. And
okay.
There was an older school where Briscoe School is. There was an older school that was torn down. But
okay.
I'd have to kind of think, you know, priority, but that would be a good alternative to do that. But the downtown has a lot of history too, such as the old flouring mill. Everything started on the plaza.
Yeah.
As far as the history. So,
Maybe
I think we need to explore a little bit more, you know.
Yes, that's right. I think that's right, is that I'm hearing that there's an interest in at least pursuing a new district, and maybe we should have a couple people in a working group from the public arts and from our commission, right, that just with Terry probably as our consultant, yeah, and that you can that we can decide what the next district might be as a proposal. Right. But is it fair?
Keep an eye. Also, they're low down. You know, the public art is very highly visible, but the plaques are in the sidewalk.
Right.
So that shouldn't distract too much, you know, make it too busy looking.
Right. Oh, right. I think that's right.
So anyway. Yeah. I've been losing my internet connection several times. So but all of a sudden you can't hear me.
I'm around. Thank you for hanging in there.
Yeah.
And if you can hang in till the election. So
let me just say one more thing if I can.
Thank you, Dale, for all your work on that, by the way.
Yes, that's right.
Picking up what Piper mentioned, you know, there are other districts, but the other two districts, you know, don't have the bang for your buck that the railroad district has, in that the railroad district, you know, has quite a bit of commercial down there. So you get a lot of traffic and you already, of course, get a lot of traffic downtown, and there's a lot of historic buildings down there already. And one of the brochures we looked at that was done 20 years ago it was incredibly detailed of a walking tour. That showed drawings of every building that isn't there and mm-hmm. built. And so, you know, in some ways that already has been done so well that
almost forgotten.
Well, it is, but you know, that brochure could be revived.
It could be,
you know, but there's also a lot of buildings that you can look at just without a tour, you know,
whereas about the railroad commission.
Well, now I'm talking about downtown, and that it's already quite historic, and there's quite a few things to look at, and it brings me back to the railroad and thinking, let's get that finished and enhance that area as much as we can.
Okay.
You know, either way, you know, I wouldn't object. Just whatever you want to work with, you know, that you're inspired to do is important. Just to keep the ball rolling.
Because we have that in place, the medallions, you know, it's a simpler process to finish those out. I'm wondering, Brandon, is there any funding, CLG funds, that we could tap into? I know that we've used those over the years. They're usually only $8,000 or $10,000, but that might get us a couple of medallions.
$1,000 through a CLG grant, and I understand that they're competitive grants. So it does depend on what other communities might put.
How much are they worth?
10,000,
yeah.
10,000.
We've got them a number of times, and and it's specifically for that purpose, is to promote tourism and history.
Yeah. Let me clarify now, because I want to be clear, Dale, that you're not suggesting that. I thought we were getting to a consensus that we're on a two-track part, that we would also work to identify another district so we can keep the momentum of the project going, as well as finish off Railroad District. Is that still okay with you?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Then I just think of budget, and I think, well, where
absolutely,
and where are the priorities? If you only have the money,
that's
for,
right.
For so, one third of it, you could finish one section. If it's one third, you do this the hub structure downtown, and
those are those are the details we can move into next. My hope is just to get back to Ken to say there is a an interest on the part of the commission to go forward. Two-track approach. And I think I heard from everybody that that's the case. Is that fair? Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds great.
Everybody's tired.
I know. I think so. So thank you for that. And now the only thing, the last thing you want to talk about is procedures at the end of a long meeting. But I think one of the things that I've talked about and been educated talking about with Brandon is how we deal with recommendations on various planning actions, because as an advisory board, we actually don't approve or deny projects per se. That's the perspective of the planning commission. And so I asked, maybe Brandon, do you have something to show about how we should be careful in our language in recommendations? Just that one thing, if we can get discussed tonight, would be great.
So, and I can be relatively brief. When I spoke with Beverly, she'd indicated, you know, first of all, we discussed a distinction between pre-applications that you just held, where it's a more informal process, and the public hearing process for quasi-judicial planning actions. And that brought to a question, well, what does quasi-judicial mean? So I indicated to Beverly that I'd provide a definition that it's really a proceeding conducted by an administrative or executive official that's similar to court proceedings. A hearing. And the Planning Commission is a quasi-judicial body in operating of approval of planning actions. And to the degree that you're all public officials as well, holding a hearing, it would be a quasi-judicial hearing for this body as well. And I won't go through all the text on this, but one of the key parts of a quasi-judicial hearing is findings of fact. And what those are is it's a term that relates to when a land use decision is made, it's based on facts, and that those facts correlate to what the criteria for approval of a planning action are. So in reviewing a proposal, both the Historic Commission and the Planning Commission should focus on the applicant's submittal and does it have the facts necessary for you to make a conclusion that it complies with the criteria. And specifically, because your purview is looking at historic district, there are historic district design standards that you're eminently familiar with, likely more than I, with all the work that and the commission for years. And there's a number of specific standards that you're evaluating whenever you look at an application. And I know for many of you, that is just inherent at this point because you've done so many reviews. But when we were talking, when I was talking with Beverly about recommendations to the Planning Commission, the value of those recommendations would largely be that the Planning Commission is going to be looking to the Historic Commission for your expertise about those historic design standards, or in the downtown design standards. Really, you're the closest thing we have to a design review committee at the city. And I also wanted to raise some question as Beverly introduced it. When the Historic Commission makes a recommendation, that often, you know, and I haven't been your liaison for that long, but it comes in the form of the Historic Commission approves the action with the following conditions. And we have found that wording can be confusing to both applicants and neighbors. Well, we receive phone calls. Well, the Historic Commission already approved it. And it's like, well, no, there's still another hearing that you have to go to before the Planning Commission. Or inversely, if the Historic Commission makes a recommendation to the Planning Commission to deny an application, when it's stated in the minutes or as is actually stated in the meeting that let's move to deny it, that can confuse the neighbors as well in terms of whether that concludes the process. So really, it's an effort to be clear with the applicants and provide a recommendation to the Planning Commission that they can reference as a finding of fact. So as an example, and this is what Beverly asked me if I could draft, was a generic example of how a recommendation might be made. The first part of that is to make findings of fact, that the Historic Commission finds that a proposed addition siding does not match the finish on the exterior walls of the original building as is required per the Historic District Design Standard in that specific section. And in this example, that the proposed windows are not compatible with the proportion, shape, and size of the original windows on the historic building. And I pulled those wordings directly from the Historic District Design Standards themselves. So by making that statement before making a recommendation, that's the meat that the Planning Commission would have to concur with your findings because they're looking at the specific criteria. And then the actual recommendation from the Historic Commission could be something along the lines of the Historic Commission recommends that the Planning Commission condition any approval of the proposed addition to include the provision of 4-inch horizontal siding matching the original, double hung windows that match the size and spacing in the windows, or whatever the detail that you wanted to share with the commission is that relates to those standards. And by implementing that as part of your recommendation component, I think that would add clarity to the process, both for the applicants, anybody watching, and ultimately the Planning Commission would have a pretty clear way to make a finding that concurs with the Historic Commission. So I know that Beverly had other issues regarding commission procedures that she wanted to discuss, but...
And some of those I can wait, but I find this to be helpful because sometimes this makes, to me, the commission more mindful of our advisory role that... and that we are disciplined about which standards we're talking about, which in all these cases, you know, that get that are controversial, that's obviously where we need to be clear. But I think if we get in the habit of the self-discipline about recommending to the Planning Commission based on these concerns, we offer the following recommendations and not use approval or denial, because in talking about that with Brandon is when, because he's been in the planning office for 20 plus years too, that gives a false impression to any outsider that we have made a definitive decision, which is not ours to make. It's the Planning Commission.
Now, can these be printed out so we
can yes. have that on? You're looking, yeah. You mean what Brandon just put on the screen?
Right, yeah.
I think that would be really helpful is to have that sent with the next packet and just...
They're all available. We all have had the downtown and historic standards, which show all the illustrations and all the numbers. And sometimes we have in the past referred to those, and often we have our discussion and talk about those standards in a more broad way. And then the planning liaison will pick our discussions, pick apart our discussions and relate them to those specifics. In the past, it's been hard for us to bring those up. And I think, you know, we can do that, but, you know, on the spur of the moment, it's a little difficult. But I think if we're sticking to the standards, they can be reduced to those standards in a simple way.
I think, yeah.
Some examples that Brandon presented, just a little guide, I think would help.
And I think,
quite a bit.
I think this is a case where it's always good. There's no question that all of these parts are in the municipal code, where we have the design standards for the downtown district standards. All of that's available, but the bottom line is most of us don't read that. So it's just a way of trying to keep at a top of mind what it is that we are recommending, and that we relate it to a design standard as often as we can. That's all it is.
Right.
And so,
hey, Beverly, I have a question.
Sure.
When the last thing that we reviewed, whatever it was, did the last thing that we denied or approved, what was that?
I think that would have been the Water Street.
Right.
So we denied it, which is something that we should not have said. So in lieu of saying we deny whatever the address is, we should have said what instead.
I think it's, I will let Brandon correct me.
I'll speak to it as a hypothetical project.
Yeah. You have to say that. That's right.
But in the case that the commission found that a project was not in conformance with the requirement to relate to a transition zone, I think instead of saying we deny it, you say that we find that it does not address the transition between one zone and another. And given that finding, we would recommend that the Planning Commission deny the application. So I think you can still make a recommendation to deny.
Right.
Should the Planning Commission choose to approve it, then we would suggest the following conditions of approval. So I guess it's really just the putting the stressor on we recommend, as opposed to the we deny or we approve. And
it's a case where words matter. And I think that it doesn't affect the content of what our reviews involve. It's mostly trying to in my mind, be very cognizant of which design standards we have concerns that are not being met, and what conditions should be met in order to meet those design standards. And that makes our recommendations, I think, more useful to the Planning Commission, because it's more specific.
Perfect.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense to you, Piper?
Yes. Yeah. So it's a recommendation based on facts.
Exactly. And one of the things related to that is how often we have people who don't have professional drawings, and then we start spending a lot of time speculating, well, what did you mean here and there? And I think we could, after talking with Brandon, we could just move quickly to say that the current drawings available do not have sufficient detail or scalability or measurements that allow us to make a judgment. And then we just move on, because otherwise we lose a lot of time just because the drawings aren't to scale. And I think that would be an improvement in our process. And frankly, if we're more disciplined, it would discipline the applicants maybe to make sure that they have drawings that are able to be evaluated.
Yeah, I agree with that. That sounds great.
Okay. They're all good, really good suggestions.
Mm-hmm. With Brandon's help, I think this will help us streamline our process in many ways. And I think that's probably as much process you guys want to talk about. So if you're okay with that, I think now we move to the election of officers. And actually, are you in charge of that part, Brandon? I think. Or somebody?
Yeah, I don't believe I am, but
Well, maybe iron, but I also did you have a chance to look at the terms of office?
Yeah, I'll pull that up online right now. Essentially, the election of officers is a requisite as part of Chapter 2.10, which is the uniform policies for all commissions. And, you know, as you know, you're appointed for a 3-year term. But then annually of each year following the appointment, reappointments, which is in April of each year, commissions have to elect new officers. The same chair can serve for 3 consecutive 1-year terms, at which point then, you know, someone else can fill that role. So although Beverly came in mid-year, I think it was in September of last year,
right,
in order to get back on track in terms of doing the elections in May of each year, which we'll look at doing so next year, getting closer to that. As part of that, sorry, I'm doing two things. Simultaneously. As part of that, you know, if there's anybody that wants to nominate a member of the commission or self-nominate to fill the role of chair or vice chair for the coming year, June through May, now would be the time to throw your hat in the ring. And I'm going to pull up terms of commission.
Remind us all
of who started when, and almost there.
So in terms of getting back on track, talking with Brandon, the most commissions have, once that they have their appointments done in May, that are the appointments are approved by the mayor and council in April, then in May is when you have elections, once you have those new people on board, is my understanding.
It's not just new people, it's people that have
reapplied.
Reappointed.
Reappointed. Yeah.
Instance probably should not nominate himself to serve as chair, given he has suggested that he would be interested in being reappointed. So,
right.
Look on the screen, listing of when terms began. And Keith, it looks like you started in 2003. So,
okay.
19 and a half.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a long time, though. Okay.
I'll turn it back over to you, Beverly, okay. In terms of
so we're at the point of we do a chair and then a vice chair. Is that correct?
But I'm happy with the chair and vice chair that we have now, and I think we should continue for another term.
Do you call that a motion, Terry?
That's a motion.
There you go. I second that.
Well, that was good. Thank you. Now, do you want any, look, if you can see Piper's face, you can see what's coming. But Piper, are you okay with being vice chair?
I am. I'm pretty strapped with time and cannot say that I can be at every single meeting. So it's, you know, sure. I'd be happy to. I'm honored. I'm actually absolutely honored to be here. I feel like I'm finally getting my feet underneath myself on this commission. So I'm honored to be the vice chair. I just can't commit to be at every meeting.
Fair enough. And I also am very honored to be working on this, and it gets me something to do.
Yeah.
I'm not working right now. And so, like a lot of you are. So, but are there any other nominations otherwise? Call for the question. And when you call for the question, I already forgot about that. Then what's the next procedure?
Well, technically it would require a vote of the commission to stop all deliberation.
Yeah. Do you want to vote to stop?
Everybody wants to vote. I think you could do that.
And yeah, vote to stop the nominations or the deliberation about nominations. All in favor say aye.
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 No. Okay. Thank you for that, Sam. And then now we go to Is it just a typical motion? If there's a motion to elect the chair and the vice chair with the same people that are currently serving that commission on that position, I would look for a motion for that. Oh, we have a motion and we have a second. Oh, I think we screwed something up in Robert's rules just there, but we won't worry about it. So
wait, who gave the second?
What's
was
that?
Was it Sam? Did Sam second that?
No, I did it, I think.
Motion to call to the question. You all vote
for the question. Okay.
Yeah. So we do have a motion on the floor from Terry and seconded by Dale to have the current officers continue for another year. Is that clear to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Well, thank you for your hard work. And I thought that I did want to ask Brandon anything new on whether we can finally meet in person again. Probably not.
Yeah, no, I've not heard.
Okay. It's the same old, same old. Okay.
I have a question. So I've been shaking the shrubs trying to get people to join or to put in their application. Is there, like you said, that usually happens in February, or what was it, April, and then they come on board in May. But if it happens a little bit later, is that an issue? Because I think some of the people that I have reached out to are just not, they can't commit because of their summer plans.
Oh, I think this only relates to elections.
Okay.
Right. Of the officers, really. Don't you think, isn't that true? I think you can come on any time.
Of new commissioners can occur at any time throughout the year.
That's great. What I thought.
The super.
Three applications that the mayor received, I believe there'll be appointments for commissioners to this and other commissions on June 21st. But if somebody applied to be on the commission in August or September or October and there's an open seat, the mayor could consider it at that time and make an appointment then.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
And I think
that that's why my confusion about when I started, because if I started in November of 2003, my re-upping was in 2004 because of that position.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a short term and then started again.
That's right. I think that does get confusing, but I think I appreciate that Brandon's trying to get us to conform to the procedures of other commissions as much as possible. So we may not have, there's two, possibly three applicants. I'm not sure. Two for sure, that including the one we met this evening, that are on the list to be appointed. So anyway, thank you for the vote of confidence. I feel like the British Prime Minister that I just got a vote of confidence.
You have better hair.
Yeah, right. Anybody has better hair. And I didn't have any illegal parties either. Yeah. So anyway, thank you very much. And Brandon, thank you for putting those papers together. And maybe you can have Regan, or Regan could email those to us or whatever.
So all the presentations that you saw this evening, all the materials will be put in the packet for minutes for the next.
Okay. That's where to find them. Okay. Well, and good to see you all. And again, we'll miss you, Terry, Keith, thank you very much for your service. Okay.
You're very
welcome.
Thank
you, Keith.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Keith, your comments will be sorely missed.
Yes, they will.
Well, I'll come in and bug you just as a private citizen.
There you go. That'd be good.
Okay. You all have a good night. Good night.
Yeah. Take care. Thank you, Beverly.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bab.